as I was saying, we should put cinder blocks in your walls before putting up the new like sheetrock. And then we'll put on the sound cancel. We are going to make like a soundproof room. Not like, you know, acousticified. We're gonna completely make a vault.
I agree, but that's going to be the setup for the sex dungeon, not for the studio.
Dude, they're the same thing. We will record while in the sex swing. All of us on one sex swing. We need to get a very strong anchor system.
I think we're supposed to have a swing each.
And then, that would be like, good for us, but I don't...
As we're swinging, we swing into each other. That's how sex swings work.
I'm not going to break your heart on this one, honestly. I can't bring myself to change your mind.
It's no fun if somebody isn't swinging. That's the point of a sex swing.
Why buy a comic that might cost more than a dime? Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time.
Welcome back to the Dime Comic Bros podcast.
Do you prefer red or black? It's not the same exact thing, but that one's in stock and can ship.
I didn't say buy it yet.
Well, cock and ball, why are we talking about it, Dad?
I just said it like three times. I said don't order it yet, but like take a screenshot so I can keep it in mind, and then...
6.5 hours later.
Anyway.
Speaking of strippers, we're here to talk about the news. And while you try to figure that one out, let me pull out the...
You mean it's the three nude news dudes, but there's only two of us?
It's the duo... Bowling
duo. Oh my god, stop hitting things!
We started happy hour early, by the way.
Sort of. CBR caught up with former Superman scribe Joe Casey to discuss his latest project, Neil Before Zod, and his experience writing the classic villain. It was recently revealed at San Diego Comic-Con 2023 that Casey is returning to the world of the Man of Steel to take on a new series that focuses not on the last son of Krypton, but rather on one of his greatest foes, General Zod. Casey said in an interview with CBR, "I've been gifted with the task of taking Zod back to his villainous roots and making him a badass again. He's got a family, which I really can't believe, and he's on a planet that he rules with an iron fist. He essentially has everything he wants, but you should never ever give a bad guy exactly what he wants. That's a recipe for disaster, and it's certainly true for this book." When asked if Superman will show up at some point in the series, Casey answered, "The series is mostly focused on Zod, although Superman may pop up here and there. Not necessarily in a continuity capacity, mind you, but more like a ghost that haunts Zod's mind. In that respect, Jor-El will make an appearance as well, but there's a razor-sharp focus on Zod, and we're going to tear up the cosmic DC universe. I'm really looking forward to doing it." Neil Before Zod is expected to release in 2024 from DC. You can read the whole interview at cbr.com. To make your life easier, subscribe to our Substack to get a PDF download of the news where we add pictures to the script, and of course, cite all of our sources because we are professionals. Jacob writes the news, even though I collect it, just for the record. I
love how you followed along with it without realizing what you were reading.
I knew what I was reading.
I heard it in your voice, like, this is not... Oh...
I'm looking forward to this a lot, actually. It caught my attention. Zod has been constantly, like, caught in a cycle of coming back and then getting sent to, like, the Phantom Zone or whatever all the time. I think the last story I read with him was a couple of years ago. I was reading, like, the Batman Superman World's Finest series, I think, and he made a couple of appearances there. Zod's a phenomenal villain. And especially for Superman, he makes a good mental threat as well as a physical one, unlike most Superman villains that are very physical. Like, he can go toe-to-toe, but also he is... Like, Zod is on the level of, like, Sinestro or, like, Black Adam. Like, in terms of, like, one, their dictatorialness and also, like, their great tacticians and shit. And I think that's a cool dynamic to have.
That'd be kind of cool to see, like, Sinestro and Zod and Black Adam team up and have, like, their own kingdom or something?
I think that they would,
like, their own Latveria. I don't know. That'd be kind of cool.
They would never share. I think they...
No, but have it as, like, a hierarchy of, I don't know, probably the Zod as the leader, and then Sinestro is, like, the military, and then Black Adam is legislature. I don't know. Something. I don't know. Something cool like that.
I think they've teamed up in, like, the, what's the team I'm thinking
I don't know. What is the team you're thinking of?
On some bad guy teams together. I think. Don't quote me.
Yeah, but I mean, like, have them segregated in their own country, running their own dictatorship, because that's what they want.
Three quarters of that sentence was very yikesy if taken in isolation. this looks cool, though. I think the lead image looks pretty.
Beans. From Nerdist.com, we got some Star Wars news. Donald Glover will co-write Lando Disney Plus Star Wars series with Steven Glover. Talk about a Lando Calrissian spin-off movie starring Donald Glover began when 2018's Solo, A Star Wars Story, arrived in theaters. Eventually, a potential Lando Calrissian movie became a greenlit series. In 2020, Lucasfilm President Kathleen Kennedy announced the development of a Lando show for Disney+. Since then, fans have waited for Disney to kick things into hyperdrive. Now the Lando series' latest update might be the clearest sign yet it will really happen, just not anytime soon. It has now been reported that Donald Glover himself is now co-writing the show for Disney+ with his brother Steven Glover.
That's nice.
Yes.
I don't have high hopes, though, because a lot of these shows have been pretty bad, or at least
should have been movies. I still have the glimmer of hope of, like, well, maybe they'll turn things around and we might get a good show every once in a while. And, like, maybe it'll be a complete surprise. So I think the first year or two of Disney Plus of just like, holy shit, we gotta make exclusive shows, is gonna be rough. And then I would really like to see them get their shit together and make good stuff.
It'd be cool. Treat it like Andor, it'll be fine.
So because this is so far out in the future, hopefully this falls into that category of being so far away from the launch of Disney Plus.
Yeah, hopefully. It's cool that he's getting involved because he is like a very multi-talented individual. His work on Atlanta was fan-fucking-tastic. And he's just them actually sticking with a recast character instead of a deepfake at this point is appreciated. We already knew that this was in the works for a while, but just it's been really discouraging lately from both Marvel and Star Wars on the Disney Plus side of just like CGIing corpses and stuff lately, that like this hopefully is able to have some life and personality and like not be a hack job shit fest.
Are you talking about like completely scanning body doubles in the background and using them against the actor's knowledge and all that stuff?
Yeah, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Not a fan.
Okay, cool.
But what I am a fan of is this announcement from comicbook.com. Batman City of Madness was announced by DC. DC announced Batman City of Madness, a 3-issue Black Label series from writer and artist Christian Ward. The series, which goes on sale October 10th, is in the Prestige Plus, which means them wide boys, and will take Batman into the Gotham below Gotham City, one that is a living nightmare, populated by twisted mirrors of our Gotham's denizens, fueled by the
Spit it out.
Fueled by the fear and hatred of flowing down from above. On social media, Ward described this book as a dream come true, as his take on a cosmic horror Batman story.
Okay, so pause real quick. What is the Prestige Plus? Is that like Batman Damned and all those?
The wide boys. The wide big ones.
So like what?
Damned, Harleen.
Okay, yeah.
The two Suicide Squad books. The big ones.
Okay.
The wide bitches. City of Madness is my love letter to Batman and a pseudo-sequel to Arkham Asylum, a serious house on serious Earth, and I have absolutely not come to play, Ward wrote. On sale 10/10/23. This announcement made my week. I have never heard of this man before. His art is fucking incredible. He's a dork on Twitter. He's been talking about this nonstop. It's a pseudo sequel to one of my favorite books. It's got Lovecraftian shit in it. I am so signed up. I will buy this issue by issue.
What do you think about the Court of Owls on the cover?
Spoopy.
Okay.
I think it's interesting because it sounded like they're the reason why the Gotham below was like locked up. So I think that's an interesting development.
It's just strange to have it as a follow-up or a sequel or whatever, a spiritual sequel to Arkham Asylum, the book, and then have the Court of Owls on the cover. It's just like, it feels like taking Phantom Menace and trying to follow it up with The Last Jedi. Like, there's a lot of stuff in between there.
I guess.
I don't know.
I guess. I think the way I'm reading it is more like the Court of Owls. Court of Owls are like that, the weird cult on the side that like actually had a point and like locked up the bad evil bullshit. And you know, Batman, you know, is like, no, you will. Why is there a padlock on this door? I will break it. And then big Squid Man, you know.
Hmm.
I don't know. I feel like they're fitting into a horror trope that I like.
Okay. I mean, I think it looks great. I am very excited for it. It's just that one detail is kind of strange of like, what's the connector? I don't know. We'll find out.
They're probably going to be more culty.
Comicbook.com had this to report. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin 2 is announced. IDW Publishing announced at San Diego Comic-Con that it will continue the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin saga with the sequel. I'm not saying all those words. Per IGN, the sequel, Re-Evolution, features the same creative team that crafted the original miniseries, which became a best-selling graphic novel. Writers Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz, artists Ben Bishop, Esau Escorza, and Isaac Escorza, colorist Edgar Delgado, and letterer Sean Lee. The original series was founded on a story idea that TMNT creators Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird conceived during the original TMNT run. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Last Ronin 2 Re-Evolution shifts focus away from Michelangelo, the titular Last Ronin of the first miniseries, and focuses instead on the new generation of Ninja Turtles introduced in the final pages of The Last Ronin, Yi, Uno, Odin, and Moja. The new Ninja Turtles' early days as trainees under Casey Marie Jones, daughter of April O'Neil and Casey Jones.
Holy shit, they had sex. I knew it.
Currently being chronicled in the pages of the prequel series TMNT The Last Ronin Lost Years and one shot TMNT The Last Ronin Last Days Special. I'm not saying it again. The sequel series takes place after the original, with the new Mutant Ninja Turtles now accurately able to add teenage to their moniker and leaving the sewers for the city above. Left in an unstable power vacuum by Michelangelo, the last surviving original Ninja Turtle, taking his final revenge on the Shredder's grandson, Oroku Hiroto, thus ending the feud between the Master Splinter's Hamada clan and the Foot clan. I read the original series, and I said, damn, I kind of don't care. It really, really, really felt like you had to have been following the comics and known all the lore. When I jumped into it, I thought it was like a special event that you could just jump into. No, you can't. You kind of got to know what's going on. And having read that event, I haven't been following the Lost Years, and I don't really care about the sequel series. It's just so deep into the lore that it's beyond me. I don't know.
It's deep into the ooze. This is from Forbes. Amazon's Invincible Season 2 finally gets a release date plus a new trailer. Amazon has just debuted a new trailer for Invincible Season 2, mainly showing off its expansive voice cast, but also has a release date of November 3rd, 2023. The first season came out all the way back in April of 21, meaning it's going to essentially be 2.5 years between season 1 and 2. The trailer looks phenomenal. The original teaser trailer in the diner being made by a porn animator was the funniest shit ever. And they just released a little like special episode. It was an origin story for Adam Eve, which was really good. So that was nice to have a little taste, because I feel like this is coming out later than they wanted. I feel like there were some issues here. So it was cool that they gave us a little nugget.
I don't know anything about this. I haven't seen anything.
You should get on it. It's so good.
I don't have Amazon Prime because it's pointless.
Read the books then, because Invincible is one of like the bestest. Like, it does the whole generic superhero shit, but like really good. And not because it's like, ooh, meta. It just like is good.
Well, speaking of trailers, let's roll into some news from Marvel.com, starting with a new season 2 trailer for Loki and a new poster. It's going to premiere on October 6th of this very year.
Okay, I have mixed feelings on this.
Ooh.
So, one, I'm incredibly burnt out because of Secret Invasion being not good.
Ass.
They definitely dropped this trailer to deflect from that pretty obviously. I think the posters look really good, to be fair. I think the trailer is fine. Loki was one of, I think, the better shows.
I can see where this is going. They introduced the Kang and then shot him in the head with a freaking toilet plunger gun in Ant-Man Quantumania.
I'll shoot you in the head with a quantum toilet plunger gun.
That, wow, okay.
Yeah. It looks okay. Loki was one of the better Disney Plus shows, in my opinion. It took a stronger advantage of the format. It felt more like alternative Doctor Who, to me anyways.
But what about Sophie? I got you there.
Mommy. I do think it did fall short because it limited... The show could have just been fun shenanigans of, like, this alt-Loki doing weird shit, but it ended up having to have bigger implications, and it kind of ended on a interesting but very unfulfilling cliffhanger. So I don't know how I feel about this being used as, like, a launch pad.
As a deflection?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that. And as, like, a launch pad for a lot more of the multiverse stuff. But it does look very solid. I think the first season had a very good visual look to it. I think it had a much more high-effort performances from its cast. It looks okay. I'm not, like, hyped for it, but that's also because I'm, like, peak Marvel depression right now. So by the time it comes out, I will probably watch it. But I'm not, like, getting excited, if that makes sense.
I really want to rewatch the first season. I will probably do that very, very soon because there are certainly details that I missed. So,
yes, you do.
I'm excited.
You are the missing details. D.G. Chichester puts Matt Murdock back in black in Daredevil Black Armor. Announced last month at San Diego Comic-Con, fans will get a chance to return to Matt Murdock's armored-up 90s days in Daredevil Black Armor. Written by D.G. Chichester and drawn by Rising Star artist Nathan Diaz and J.P. Mayer, the four-issue limited series will take place during Chichester's beloved run on the title. Remembered for epic storylines like The Last Rites and Fall from Grace, Chichester's run reintroduced Elektra to the Marvel Universe and suited up Matt Murdock in a sleek new armored costume. Now witness a never-before-seen chapter of Daredevil that adds new depth and mystery to this fan-favorite area. Era. When civilians, heroes, and villains alike are disappearing into the dark depths of Hell's Kitchen Underground, Matt Murdock will need to push his extraordinary senses and his armored suit beyond their limits to find out who's responsible. Throughout the saga, Daredevil will be pitted against a who's who of Marvel's deadliest villains, including Hobgoblin, Sabretooth, and more, all building towards an explosive confrontation with the mysterious evil that's pulling all the strings. Matt's armor will have to work overtime as the series delivers nonstop insane action and brutal fighting in extreme 90s fashion. Alright, so here's the deal. I'm a bit of a sucker for 90s shit, even though I know most of it's crap. I have not read this run of Daredevil. I am working my way through a lot of Daredevil history right now that I'm not familiar with. The suit looks cool. The book looks interesting. This is the most 90s thing ever, and it's not the most comic book thing ever. It's a series just based on, so you know we really like that costume? We should go back to that. And I respect that.
The new cover, like, that just came out, looks extremely 90s. If I looked at it cold, I would have been like, that's an old run. But no, it's brand new.
Marvel's been doing this a lot lately.
Yes.
A lot of, mostly 90s, but like a lot of mini-series done by the OG creative team going back to fill in gaps, and most of them seem to be good. I haven't read a lot of them, but I read a couple, and I think Silver Surfer and Spider-Man have had a lot of them lately, definitely Ben Reilly, and most of those have been received really well, and I would rather have them do that than try to, like, just push a character back into old habits for the sake of, you know, the ongoing narrative. I would rather them just go back and fill in more infinite stories within a set time period, you know? Which is weird, because that's the exact opposite feeling I have for Marvel. Not for Star Wars. I get tired of them squeezing shit in, but, like, you know, go forward. But when it comes to, like, comics, I don't know. I hate when they revert the character progression. I'd rather just go back to the time period.
Finally, Marvel announces Howard the Duck 50th Anniversary Special. Marvel Comics will celebrate Howard the Duck's 50th anniversary with a special one-shot in November. Steve Gerber and Val Mayerick introduced the cult favorite comics character into the Marvel Universe in Adventure Into Fear number 19, published in 1973. Chip Zdarsky and Joe Quinones, the acclaimed creative team who worked on the 2015 Howard the Duck series, will reunite for the oversized Howard the Duck number 1 one-shot. Additional writers and artists will also contribute to the issue, each offering their unique takes on the beloved Marvel character. In a press release, Marvel says that Zdarsky and Quinones' story will get into the nitty-gritty of the Private Eye's hectic history with a feather-raising journey through the Howardverse. The other stories will examine paths not taken in Howard the Duck's history. I, the editor, cut all of the summaries about the little stories that'll be included because there were a lot of terrible duck puns that I did not want to personally read.
But they're punny.
Also because I couldn't figure out how to make wach sound like a duck. Wah. Yeah, I wasn't doing that. I'm not going to choke myself. I'm not into that. I don't know.
I mostly included this for you.
I know. I'm kind of torn about it. I like the meme of Howard the Duck, but when you sit down and read like the original creator, Howard the Duck was suicidal and tried to kill himself in the first issue and was like very dark and depressing and not in the right mind and kind of just wanted to fuck everything. So I think the character's pretty far from the original intention, so I don't know how to feel.
Dude, he's literally me for real.
I thought you were gonna say he was me.
he's literally me for real, on cap. No, no cap on God. I'm channeling Colin.
I don't know.
Here, but he is here.
That's not true. Colin says on COD, and a bunch of other fish puns, and I really want to hit him.
I also like hitting Colin.
I like abusing children.
Is he a child? Is he really?
He must be. He's saying uncod, uncod for eel.
For eel.
That's the end of the news. Ooh, good push.
So are we doing one or two?
Oh, fuck it. Let's go for two.
Do you have two?
I have two.
Okay.
I really pushed hard and found two.
Okay, that works. I'm just trying. Are you planning on watching Mutant Mayhem in the next couple of weeks?
I would love to, but I have no idea.
Okay, because I can talk about that, but if I wanted to go watch it as a whoop, and then we can do it yet, but if I have other stuff, but
it is up to you.
Who's texting you?
The Devil Wears Prada sent me a message. They must love me. Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm sure, buddy.
Let me go get one of my talking books.
Damn. This motherfucker gotta have the physical book in his hand.
I must, otherwise I won't remember my notes.
That's the point of making them notes, is you write them down.
Says the guy that gave me shit for writing in an actual notebook for 2 years.
Yeah?
A few moments later.
I read Doctor Strange, Fall Sunrise, or Red Sunfall, or whatever the fuck it's called.
Fall Sunrise.
In the Treasury Edition.
You bitch! I saw it on the shelf and I resisted buying it. It looks so good. I couldn't afford it.
It does look good. Spencer reviewed this last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And Doctor Strange is kill.
He is kill, but he's not kill.
But he's not actually kill. He's doing strange things in the astral planes.
You're so funny, man.
I know. I said astral.
Shut the fuck up. Why do you do this to me?
I don't know.
Why do I find you funny?
It's actually fitting that we were talking about Arkham Asylum, the comic book, because that I have read the actual book a couple of times. The script that was written for it, that's included in the back of the book, and that really helped me to see some of the iconography that's in the book. I saw all the pictures, obviously. I read the book a couple of times, but there was a lot of things that were included for a reason. And so when I read the book, I saw it and I was like, oh, that looks a lot like whatever. I wonder why that's there. And just moved on, because my brain works like that. I don't understand the figurative very well. It doesn't come easily for me. But the script holds my hand and explains it. And that really helped me to appreciate that book a lot more. Doctor Strange does a lot of the same things, but its head is so far up its ass that I see a lot of weird looking shit and I don't know what is going on. I was halfway through the book like, I don't know what the fuck is happening right now, but it looks cool. That's pretty much my review for the whole book.
That's fair, honestly. It is a lot.
Like, I can't even begin to guess at the iconography or metaphors or whatever that are happening to try to research what it's supposed to mean, what it's referencing. There's just so much, and most of it's lost on me. So that makes the story a bit harder to understand. There's a lot that happens where I'm just like, I really don't know what I'm looking at. A lot of it is Doctor Strange kind of being lost in the astral plane, and that's pretty cool. The artwork is fantastic. I would hate to read a 12-issue series with this art style. It would get disorienting and probably kind of samey, but 4 issues makes it look really, really cool. Because it's disorienting. Yeah. Really cool. I'm glad I waited and got it in the Treasury Edition, because that format makes it look all that much cooler. That's the word that comes to mind, is this book is disorienting. It's just, there's so much that doesn't make sense. It's really cool. I'm glad it exists in the capacity that it's in.
Are there any bonuses in the Treasury Edition, like extra info? I know that aside from, like, I'm assuming spare covers.
Spare covers. I think that was pretty much it. It was pretty minimal.
Yeah.
$30. I had this weird thing. I don't know if it's because I threw it in my lunchbox as I was going into work, because the shape on some of the pages in the middle of the book were shaped like the bowl that my lunch was in, but it wasn't on the outsides of the pages. I don't know what happened. I might have ruined my own book. Maybe. I don't know.
It might be because the covers are soft enough to bounce back into shape, but the pages aren't. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
That's really weird.
It was like issue 2, where a couple of pages had a weird shape almost cut into them. It was bad. But yeah.
All aboard the Strange train, baby.
If Arkham Asylum was a 6 out of 5 for you because of how it was written and all of the weird mysticism iconography just completely makes perfect sense in your brain, then I would suggest this one. But if not, I'd suggest maybe a slight sale, like $25.
Like, how is it that we're friends, honestly?
I don't know.
It's really weird, because we have very different tastes sometimes, and then sometimes we just agree across the board.
You're like, oh my gosh, the guy is on a canoe with a lion. It means that the homeless should have free Wi-Fi. Holy shit, this director is god tier.
True. You know who else deserves free Wi-Fi?
Your mom.
Jean-Paul Valley.
I never would have guessed that.
Azrael.
Azrael?
I read a very weird book.
I did too.
So I read Sword of Azrael. It is a miniseries from last year that is 6 issues plus a one-shot. The one-shot was originally broken up in the Batman Urban Legends book. I believe I mentioned it when I reviewed one of those paperbacks maybe 6, 7, 8 months ago. It's a little prelude done by the actual creative team for this miniseries, just kind of giving you a taste of what this new book might be like to see if it's popular, you know, the usual. So Azrael is a very well-known yet really not popular character. I don't think anybody dislikes him, but despite having a very big stint in the main Batman book in the 90s for obvious reasons, back when he was introduced, this character has, like, no books. Like, I found a total, like, there's the original run that came out around Nightfall. Those are not even fully collected in trades. And then there's one miniseries done with a different character who takes on the title in, like, the mid-2000s. And then there's this book. Like, that's it. It's insane. The character's always kind of around, but I don't get it. Basically, Jean-Paul Valley is, like, a nurse or a doctor now, which I think is a cool, very bizarre character choice. He works typically with, like, elderly people and, like, I think they're, like, retirement homes, basically. And so recently he's been getting a different characterization for how Azrael works, which I think works very well like this. It's, like, a halfway point between, I'd say, Daredevil and Moon Knight, kind of. So he's very guilt-ridden over the stuff he does because they're emphasizing how the Azrael, basically, persona is the coding and the brainwashing and stuff. So it's basically a different entity, but also Jean-Paul Valley is also, he is a man of faith. He still has his faith outside of the brainwashing. So he's constantly in conflict with each other. It's very Catholic or Orthodox coded, in my opinion. Obviously, there's a lot of emphasis on the saints, which is a very, both of those, it's not a Protestant thing. So he's constantly in conflict and feels guilty for what he's doing. It's really weird. I do really like the way that the character is characterized, though. Basically, in this story, he hides in a monastery, and then a girl finds him and is like, God sent me because reasons, and then they go on an adventure, sort of, finding out more history about the Order of Saint Dumas and the Knights Templar and all of his backstory stuff. That's a lot of retcons. They find, basically, a magic alien box that makes angels. It's fucking wacky. Like, basically, the Order is founded on this original object that seemingly fell from space that they believe can make angels come into this world, and they do weird cult shit with it. They fight Satan in this book, which is really cool, but it's not, like, Satan, but it is, they call it the Satan. It's all of the quote-unquote angels in this kind of pseudo-mythology are the personifications of ideas, so it's, like, Azrael is, like, the angel of death and so on, or angel of vengeance, depending on who you ask. It's a very Catholic thing. And the Satan is, like, a amalgam blob angry big man with body parts replaced to be like the ultimate angel of killing or some shit. It's really fucking weird. He's huge. It's very odd. Basically, the emotional crux of this issue and for the character is Jean-Paul coming to grips with still believing but also not falling prey to his own predilections and, like, the system or the programming that he has from the Order of Saint Dumas, and accepting that he's not going to be perfect, but he can still do good things in an imperfect way. And that's kind of, like, his mental distinction for most of this series is, like, no, I, the person, are the good part, and this fake program angel thing in my head is where all the bad stuff happens. You know, I get angry and I call someone a sinner and I kill them and it's the bad thing. But in reality, I can also do that, and I have done it. I have killed people without Azrael present or, like, in the driver's seat, if that makes sense. I really like the emotional crux of this. I think it's really cool. This is a topic that I find very interesting in the abstract and also emotionally. It's very comic booky and, you know, dorky, but it takes itself just seriously enough where I feel like there's either some level of personal investment from the writer or at least like maybe an academic appreciation of different types of Christian faith, I think, or history, I guess.
I flashed you.
No dick pics, bro. I don't know. I think it's really cool. The art is very good. I'm not a huge fan of the style. It's very... I've used this term a lot lately, and I don't like to use it as a crutch, but it feels kind of like YA anime-esque. Not because it looks like an anime, and not because it looks like it's for children, but, like, there's just something about the way the characters move. There's a lot of, like, a lot of smear frames, if that makes sense. Like, a lot of smear frames. None of it looks bad. It looks really good. There's really good design work here. The action is extremely fluid. It's, I just don't think it fits tonally with this character and or with this story. It's a little too lighthearted looking, I think. Part of that's also the coloring. There are a couple of fucking awesome double page spreads of like, how biblically accurate angel, but it's Azrael coded. So like it's yellow and orange and red. It's really cool. There's a really cool single page, single panel of like John Paul, like superimposing like the spiritual world onto the physical world. So Jean Paul looks like Azrael, but also he has all the angel features and he's got eyeballs and feathers everywhere. It's really, really fucking cool. I just don't love the art. It's just a preference thing. It is really good though. It's written by Dan Waters, who I am now realizing it might be a new favorite of mine. I read another book by him also featuring Azrael, which was, Arkham City. What was it called? Shitballs. Azrael also featured in it. The Order of the World. It was the one about all the escaped freaks and the doctor trying to get them all, but the guy with the eyeballs for fingers and shit. Really weird, low-profile book, but I really, really liked it. It was one of my favorite from last year. Azrael also featured in that. I think this is this guy's, like, favorite character. I just got a vibe on this. This is his favorite, like, niche character that he wants to work on. He also apparently is the writer on the relaunch of Lucifer under the Black Label imprint, so he has a lot of prestige because of that, and he works kind of with Neil Gaiman, so I'm really going to look into this guy's writing. He has a very... He balances, like, very esoteric ideas and concepts and stuff without making it so self-serious, you know? Like... This is a book about, like, angels and demons and shit and cults and faith, and but also it's still a goofy comic book with, like, a silly, goofy guy as its protag who, like, beats the shit out of people and cries about it, you know? Like, there's a good tonal balance to his writing. I just don't think it fully extends to the art. The art was by Nicola Szczesny-Majewski. I genuinely don't know
how to pronounce that guy.
I genuinely don't know how to pronounce his last name. I've seen his other art before. He also did work on Urban Legends and Future State Gotham before Future State Gotham turned to shit. So he's very talented. I do like his art. I follow him on Instagram. He does cool stuff. Just not... I don't think totally work for this story. There are some sequences where Jean-Paul, like, goes into his mind palace, basically, and, like, trips balls, and I think those look really fucking good. So there's plenty of artistic merit to it. I just think on, like, a basic... action sequence, it looked good, but the tone doesn't match how serious I'm taking the writing, if that makes sense. I bought this at Jetpack for cover price of $16, and I think it's definitely worth it. I think if the character interests you or the topic interests you, it's definitely worth picking up, and I really hope that this character gets more books because I always liked Azrael, but I like it when these sorts of, not even niche characters, well-known but, like, unpopular characters get more books. He's a cool character who's been given a nice, fresh coat of paint over the past few years, and I think they should continue that. Make it make money. Go buy it. You got more shit for me?
I do.
Yeah. Feed it to me on a spoon and make airplane noises.
I am about to lose half our fan base.
Uh-oh.
I watched Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, gosh.
So, longtime listeners will remember that I was listening through the series, I don't know, like 2 years ago on audiobook, and I got to book 5 and accidentally missed it and went up to book 6, and then things didn't make sense, and I just gave up on the series entirely, even though I was almost done. So, after a long break... I was like, you know what? I'm kind of tight on time right now and need another talking point. I'll just watch the first movie and see if I can make those into talking points. So this movie was released in 2001. It was directed by Chris Columbus, and it follows the plot of the first book.
Holy shit.
I know. I really don't have much to say about this movie.
So that was a fucking lie.
As far as I can remember from listening to the book 2-ish, maybe 3 years ago, it follows the story really, really closely. At least the important bits. It moves faster than the book did. Obviously, because it takes a couple of hours to read through the first book, and it took an hour and 15 to watch this movie. But it summarizes the events pretty well, so that I didn't feel like I was really missing anything. I really don't understand why this series was so popular when I was a kid. Dumbledore sucks balls and I hate him.
He does suck balls because he's gay!
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, nobody did until after all the books were out.
It pisses me off seeing him likened to Obi-Wan Kenobi and Gandalf, because that's so dumb and cringe and gay and bad. He sucks as a wizard. I've had this rant before. It's amazing how well they cast Harry and Ron and Hermione, or Hermione, or whatever. Emma Watson is great. And so are her co-stars. They are really good as child actors, even if they were brought to modern day and cast in whatever other series you want to name. I don't care. They do very well in their roles. It's evident why their careers took off. They were very good as children actors. I was surprised at how many other actors were in the movie that I recognized. Snape and what's his name? The big goofy oaf.
He is Hagrid.
Hagrid.
Literally my dad.
Are excellently cast as well. Another thing that sucks balls, and that's another pun, is Quidditch. Quidditch sucks balls. It's the dumbest game ever. It's like, why even care about 90% of the game when the only thing that lets you win is catching the tiny little golden ball? The whole entire team should be beating the piss out of each other trying to get that, because that's what wins the game.
Uh-huh. So why do you say you think you're going to lose half of our fan base by saying that this is not that great?
Because the series is so well loved, and I kind of hate it. I don't even give a shit about all the behind-the-scenes stuff that J.K. Rowling is actually a terrible person, and it only gets worse the more she talks, and she needs to take notes from President Trump and just shut the fuck up! I don't even care about any of that. The product that came out kind of sucks. And it was huge when I was a kid. I remember when the first book came out. It was taking the country by storm. And the satanic panic had its last rumblings with, oh my gosh, we're teaching our kids magic and they're going to be casting spells and performing seances in their bedrooms. It's not even good literature. It shouldn't have been included in schools because it doesn't teach kids how to write books or read good books. It's just mediocre. The whole everything is mediocre.
That's fair.
Literally 3 stars on my Letterboxd review. It's the bottom of all of my 3-star movie reviews so far this year. Just above 2.5 stars. And I would say which movies those... sandwich this one, but I really think I need to rewatch Evil Dead Rise because I wasn't in the mood when I saw it, and I'm confident that it's gonna jump up in rating when I rewatch it.
I did rewatch it again. It is definitely more interesting.
Yeah,
I was in a better mood than you, but I was also not in the best mood for that.
Yeah,
I was all wiggity wooed out. Stop looking at the door behind me. when we talk about Wiggity Woos, bitch.
But there's a nun standing right there.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. You know who? What else is spooky or should be spooky?
I gotta pee really bad.
Fine, go pee. Don't die.
12 seconds later.
I came up with more writ as I was pissing, because I rounded half the fan base as just the obligatory, "Ooh, actually, I grew up with that series and I can quote every line that Dumbledore says because he's genius, just like my idiot brother-in-law that I don't even adopt." But also there's the other half where it's like, "Oh, actually, you should understand everything that J.K. Rowling is saying and you should actually have an opinion because she's a terrible, awful person." So just generally half the fan base gone. That's the end of my rant.
Beans. So you know what should be scary, but isn't really that scary? Midnight Suns.
Oh, I was going to say your mom.
Ah, she's funny. My mom. Midnight Suns. It was released in 2022 and 2023.
This is going to be fun.
Okay, so this is another one of my niche hyper-focus areas of, like, these comics are usually shit, but I love them anyways.
Ooh,
like,
oh, actually, it had Doctor Strange in it. I gotta read it.
Yeah, that too. this was one of the most, let's just make another book because there's a video game coming out that I've read in a while.
Oh, I thought you were actually reviewing the game.
No, although I did hear it wasn't horrible, but I don't...
It was kind of horrible.
I don't have interest in it. The cutscenes looked cool, and then I realized the type of game it was, and also they put Iron Man in the fucking Midnight Suns! Kill yourself!
Call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK to speak to a counselor, or visit suicidepreventionlifeline.org.
Okay, so the rest of the team for this one definitely feels like the most popular, vaguely maybe kind of spooky Marvel characters at the time. So the team-up consists of Blade, Magic, Wolverine, Spirit Rider, who's a Ghost Rider, sort of, and Nico Minoru, who is a very random character who I have never seen before. And also one of the students from Strange Academy, which was kind of the more interesting part for me. So this was released a little bit after the Midnight Suns video game that came out last year. The Midnight Suns are basically, like, one of Marvel's, like, spooky team-up teams. They always have a different lineup. Usually there's a Ghost Rider, sometimes there's a Doctor Strange, sometimes Moon Knight's there. It's just they're spooky magic weirdos, you know? And I like their spooky magic weirdos. I like Marvel's spooky magic shit, even though most of it's not good. I really, really like DC's magic spooky shit because they're good at it. Basically, there's, like, a prophecy, and one of the students is doomed to be bad and shit. It's very fucking stupid. This also involves Agatha Harkness, who has been hottified. That character is constantly ping-ponging around between really hot and young, really hot and old, and, like, old grandma. Like, she's constantly changing form, which I guess is fine, I don't really care. But, oh my gosh, this was rough. One of the main antagonists is Dr. Doom, which does make sense because he knows magic. He's one of the, like, the strongest magic users. The man's been to hell. But just with this team up, if the team lineup, Doom feels like such a weird antagonist for them. He just the power level disparity between them is insane. I don't get it. The big bad is very disappointing and uninteresting, has nothing to say. And that's, I think, my biggest thing with this book as a whole. It has nothing to say. There's no themes. It's just a team up book for the sake of a team up book, but not even like, damn, wouldn't it be cool if Spider-Man and the Hulk were, like, cool and buddies? Whoa. This one is literally just, we should put our most popular characters that kind of have to do with magic or stabbing people, and then put them in a book, and then make our bad guys relevant to other books. And, like, this ties into the Strange Academy book, but not in, like, a very meaningful way for that book. It's not like this is, like, a crossover or a culmination of that story. It just happens to include one of those characters, and is really, really disappointing on that front. The art is pretty okay, though. It's the only thing that really keeps it from going, like, completely into the shitter. It was written by Ethan Sachs. I don't want to drag his name through the mud. David Nakayama did the art, and it's not my favorite thing in the world. It is very overly polished, I think, for my taste. But there are some really good poses. There's some solid anatomy work. And the costumes are great. The costumes are very pretty. They work well. Of course, you got the yellow and brown Wolverine look, which is great. Magic always has her midriff down now, and I don't care. I'm into it. I love it. She's got a spooky sword. I like it. It's just a weird lineup, man. The only part I think I actually appreciate is the Spirit Rider instead of just having a Ghost Rider. Like, the Spirit Rider is, by contrast, an extremely unknown character. So I like that, but the rest of this is just bleh. And also, I read it during the summer, and it's not even spooky, but it should be spooky.
Well, that's your fault.
I know, but shut up. DC's also releasing Night Terrors during the summer. You know what's terrifying? Me melting into a blob because my balls are sweaty. I bought this for...
But what if your balls melt into a blob because they're so sweaty?
I'll melt your balls into a blob. I bought this for $15 or $16 for cover price. I think it's a bit much for that. I believe these were only 22-page issues, so it's a thin book as well. Obviously, it's a Marvel book, so they don't include the ads in the trade. Well, I mean, like, any trade. But when this was originally published as issues, I'm very confident it had a lot of ads in it to fill, like, page space. Which is weird, because it doesn't feel like it was rushed. It just... It's 5 issues, but this could have been 4, for sure, if you crunched it. And I wouldn't even necessarily have been better, but just... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they milk this a lot, and I don't like that. I don't like milking. I like milking, but I don't like milking, you know? Which is disappointing, because I like the spooky Marvel shit, and I like all of these characters individually, at least the ones that I'm familiar with, but, like, not, like... We're not going to get another Midnight Suns book for, like, 4 more years now, and this one's not good.
Well, speaking of milking, we milk as much content out of what we record every single week for the people that pay us.
Give us money!
Jeff Lawrence and Caitlin have gone over to patreon.com/DimeComicBrosNetwork and signed up under one of the 4 tiers they found there, and they support the show every single week with everything that we do, even though we sometimes skip the Patreon exclusive show happy hour every once in a while. So please consider helping us out and going over to Patreon and giving us money. It really does help.
Speaking of something that does help, the reason why Colin's not here right now is Ooh. Because he is actually at Boston Fan Expo, kind of half sharing slash helping Jeff Lawrence, ironically enough, with his booth. So Colin's been, I don't know if he's been selling his art or if he's just been giving shit out.
I think he's just sitting there.
I don't know, man. It looks like he's having fun, whatever he's doing. But just because he's not here, I feel like giving him a shout out because he should post more of his art stuff. Colin also has a Patreon and his Instagram for lots of cool art. It's at Melancholy Gray, and his Patreon is Momin. Go give him some love for us.
I can't help you with Melancholy Gray if it's G-R-E-Y or G-R-A-Y, but Momin is M-O-M-I-N.
Yes. Go show him some love and support. He's been doing some really cool art while he's been out. Looks like he's having a ball. Hopefully he'll come back and have something to talk about for once.
Doubt.
He can try. Also, a thank you to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire, over at the Megastore. They have all sorts of comic-related shenanigans. They got the Funko Pops and the action figures and the dice and the figurines and the weird Batman Batarang knives and the Wolverine claws and the Captain America shields, and they also do actually have comic books. Lots and lots of comic books. They got single issues, trade paperbacks, hardcovers, omnibuses, compendiums, indie comics, mainstream comics, all sorts of crazy stuff. Old issues, new issues, daddy issues. Those are mine. I left those there last time. Go show them some love for us. They boost us and they show us lots of love and affection. Slap our poster on the way in. Take one of our business cards. It would be greatly appreciated. And
support local business. Wow. Next yeah. week was supposed to be something, but I don't think it's going to happen. So what are we changing it to?
Next week, we're going to be discussing the first X-Men film.
Oh, yeah.
Directed by a pedophile.
Nice.
That's fun. We were going to discuss Coda, the whole 12-issue series, but because it's a very dense book and we only have 2 copies and Colin is out and busy, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So that'll be in a month.
Maybe.
We'll do it.
Tune in then. Go back. Go back.
Yeah. Bye.
Goodbye.
Monkey. You should also do that.
Bingus.
I agree.
Bingus with a small penis. My seat is bouncy.
Yeah, what else is bouncy?
Your ass.
It is, actually.
Instead of looking at Audacity, we should probably look at that thing. Voice meter.
Speaking of chairs, actually, I wanted to talk to you about that.
I would love to be a chair for somebody.
Yeah, I know.